Cascade, a story by Raccoon Tales. From the top of the last bridge over the Cascade, they said, you could see the three worlds of the Chatra people. Look upwards, and there above would be infinite skies packed with countless stars, from one of which the Founders came, if you believe the stories of old Mar. All around you lay the city world of Stritch, the here and now of Chatra life. 10 million people packed onto the first and only island of warmth on a dead world, left alive only by the grace of the machines who cared for them, never sleeping, never ceasing their work for even a minute. Directly below, the Cascade roared, a wall of pulsing, coruscating energy 100 yards high and almost a mile wide. It burst like a river of lightning from a point high in the mountains of the far south, flowing all the way to the very center of the city before earthing itself at the base of the Terminus Tower. If you dared to venture out to the edge of the platform and stare down into the heart of the torrent, some said that it could tell you your future, or show you visions of a glorious past long gone and forgotten by the people of the city. Surrounded by beaming faces and voices raised in song, Lil clutched Vicky's cold hand and remembered as they walked towards the unprotected edge. Poor little Vicky. It don't matter, she would say to Lil when they were both just kids playing out in the streets of the Aching Heights. It don't matter if there's nothing here, because when I'm 16, I'll join the Cascade and we'll go to the Third World. We don't have to stay in the Middle World. You should come too. Lil hadn't understood at that time, or perhaps she had chosen not to. Later, she would go on to think that Vicky would grow out of it, as though it were just a silly phase. Then there was a time where they would argue and fight and scream and sulk for days, but Lil could only argue for so long. She knew that there was no shaking the faith of the true believer. Cultists. The city was full of them, particularly in the poorer sectors out towards the edge of the habitable zones. They'd got to Vicky's father, and through him they had got to her. The followers of the Third World, they were called. Nothing more than a tiny, drug-addled suicide cult set up by a raving lunatic with only two things going for him: an unshakable passion for his delusions, and a ready supply of the most powerful hallucinogens in the city. Almost anything probably seemed like a good idea after a few carefully measured doses of MNX4. The world could end or not, and you most likely wouldn't notice the difference. Thankfully, in approximately 1 minute's time, the followers of the Third World would be no more trouble to anyone, and neither would Lil. Perhaps they might even be proven right, and they would all ascend to the Third World with Vicky screaming, "I told you so! I told you so!" like they were kids again. Lil didn't know what happened after that point. Vicky had never been too clear on the details herself, really. The precipice was maybe 50 yards away now. They were on the north side, looking down over the city towards the central areas. The terminus loomed large in the far distance, even from here. Lil could only imagine how impressive it must be up close, but she had never been down to the center of Stritch, and now she never would. Some loss. The group settled there in a line, right on the edge. No security guards, no fences. The city was good about that. If you wanted to go and jump off a bridge, they would stand aside and happily let you do it, provided you didn't inconvenience anyone important in the process. If you wanted to jump into the Cascade, so much the better. No mess to clear up that way. A silence fell over the platform. There were still people here, even at this time, but whatever conversation had been going on had now ceased out of respect, possibly. Lil didn't know what these strangers could possibly find to respect in this. She felt Vicky tighten her grip. Her friend spoke, her voice no more than the lightest of whispers. "It's so quiet," she said. "I'm happy that you're here too, Lil. It'll be so much fun." She smiled, and Lil realized that she was trembling with excitement. "Don't think so," Lil thought, blinking back sudden tears. "But it'll be better than this." She knew that Vicky was going to jump before she felt her friend make a forward movement. She glanced over the line of cultists. In the center of the line, more or less, stood a tall man with deep green skin and spider-like legs. He'd decided not to jump, the faithless coward. Of the 30 or so, there were maybe another 2 like him. The rest were ready to go, either lost in a religious frenzy or so spaced out that Lil couldn't begin to imagine what they were seeing. The movement came. Lil could see the ripple of every muscle underneath Vicky's pale red skin as her arm pushed forward, dragging Lil's hand with it. It seemed to take an age. How long had it been since her last dose of Mexin? Not that long, surely, but she knew the signs and she could feel the world starting to drag by. There was still all the time in the world to change her mind. All the time in the world to go back to her streets and her drug and her empty home and to try to pick up the pieces. Another movement caught her eye. Over to her left, some distance away, a machine rolled up the bridge on wide caterpillar tracks. It was about twice the height of the average chatterer, a maintenance automaton, probably heading over to do whatever it was that the machines actually did to keep the towers running and the city alive. Nobody really knew, and the only machine that could answer was old Ma, and she hadn't spoken a public word in 20 years except via the priestess Shirka. Lil didn't like the machines. She couldn't sense what they were feeling. They were nothingness where a mind should be. The newcomer stopped dead, its torso twisted to face the platform. Was it watching? Could it even watch, or did it sense its surroundings in some other way? Someone else's question, thought Lil, and leapt. It is warm here in the Church of the First Mother. I stand at the front of this great metallic hallway raised up on a circular dais to face the congregation of the temple, our home. I will speak so that all the gifted both here and throughout Stritch may hear the words of the priestess and rejoice. It is the first time of remembrance since I have taken up my duties as her aide and her voice. Will the words seem as hollow from my own mouth as they did from old Tavis before he finally died? Beside me, the priestess stands. Today she wears a ceremonial robe of simple white cloth. I see the blackened three-fingered claw jutting out of her sleeve where a normal hand should be. Around her neck she wears that special collar, an ugly, heavy-looking thing that can only have been manufactured by the machines. Above the collar, of course, there is nothing. Where a face should be, there is only smooth skin in sickly shades of yellow and pink. Her hair is long and dark, but around her head are 10 small marks where the skin looks charred and no hair will grow. The crown of the priestess, I have heard it called. She looks unreal, like something that has stepped out of a child's storybook. She has no mouth to breathe with, no eyes to see with, and no ears to hear with. Yet she is all-seeing, all-hearing, and raised above all others save for the First Mother herself. Maimed, hated, feared, and powerful. This is Shirka. We have met only twice before today, and I am sure that it is two times too many. The call to remembrance resonates all the way through my body and echoes through my head long after it has faded away. There is utter silence and the congregation waits. Some, I know, will not believe a word that I am about to say, and I can't help but wonder if I'm one of them. The priestess stirs, and I relax myself, opening my mind. It isn't control, that's not the right word. The priestess cannot make me speak or put words into my mouth. Nobody, no matter how gifted, has ever possessed that kind of ability. This is suggestion. If my mind is open to it, I can read her thoughts as though she is speaking, and those thoughts can become words with the tacit approval of my mind. This is why I was chosen. I should be honored, I know. I do not feel it. It begins as always. We will remember that in the beginning, only two remained. Lil drops serenely through the air, totally calm. At first, the drop had been a rush of noise and screams and a blur of lights, but here on the edge of the cascade, their fall seemed to have slowed to the gentlest descent. She wondered at first if it was like this for anyone else. She couldn't move her head, or at least she could try, but she knew that they would all have dropped into the energy storm long before the instructions could filter through to her stupid slow muscles. It was an absurd scene, bodies floating down into the cascade like so many feathers on the breeze. Cheerful snowflakes dropping into a furnace, all set against a cityscape lit by the most fabulous light show in this or any other world that Lil could imagine. Perhaps the energy of the cascade could slow time itself this close. When all was said and done, Nobody knew what it could or couldn't do beyond feeding the city's energy grid, and nobody who came into contact with Cascade Energy was ever in a position to tell stories about it afterwards. The light of the Cascade bathed Lil and Vicky as they drifted ever downwards. From the top of the bridge, it had seemed like a mix of orange and ambers, with bolts of blood red spiralling downstream. Lil had been a little disappointed by that, since her own birth colours were predominantly red except for the streak of deep blue running down from her left shoulder. She had hoped for something different. Perhaps a yellow period, or even one of those rare hours where the Cascade ran an icy blue and you could almost believe it really was a great river of electrified water flowing down from the mountains of the far south. Of course nobody, not all the scientists in the city, could predict the colours of the Cascade. You took your colours as they came when you were born, and now Lil would disintegrate into whatever colour she was given as she died. They were now, finally, drifting down into the Cascade itself. It was warm here, but not hot. That was one of the things they said, wasn't it? That whatever did happen to things dropped into the Cascade, they were 99% sure they didn't burn up. I wonder, Lil thought, will it hurt? The First Mother stayed to watch over the children of Stritch, to defend them and nurture the gifted ones in service to the purpose. Father sleeps in the deadly ground, to rise up only when the mind is pure and the purpose is at hand. For a long time, I might have believed that this was true. At least, I told myself that I believed it. Age and reason erode many things, and it is far easier to believe from a long way away than it is to do it here, in the home of our idol, the machine. Sometimes I envy the false believers, those fantasists who worship the unseen, the imaginary, or even the Cascade itself. They will never meet their gods. Reaching out, Lil could feel the minds of the others as they entered the Cascade. Telepaths were not altogether rare in Stritch. Some estimates put the numbers as high as 1 in 1,000 with some degree of innate ability, though the numbers who could consciously apply that ability were far fewer. Of those few, most tended to gravitate towards the church if they weren't discovered as children and taken there. It was safer. A lot of people didn't like telepaths, and it didn't take much to turn that into open violence. The Aching Heights was one of the worst places for that, so Lilla kept quiet. All she had wanted was to look after her parents and grow up with her best friend. In one crazy day, it had all been taken away from her, and she was glad to be following on. Here in the Cascade, she could feel the energy flowing all around them. The orange backwash passed through her as though she was no more substantial than the air about her. All around, slivers of golden energy streaked through the air, worming crazily downstream. One curled straight towards her at an impossible speed, and then spiralled away to her right, earthing itself right in the centre of Vicky's forehead. As Lil watched, a swelling began to form on her friend's face where the bolt had pierced her. Her face became distorted, and Lil could see her cheekbones grow and twist grotesquely. The skin on her face split and tore like wet paper as her skull exploded outwards in a sickening, boiling frenzy. Three more golden slivers slammed into the dying girl's body, and she disintegrated into merciful nothingness. Lil suddenly found her hand empty, and she was alone in the world. Vicky was gone. Perhaps even to the third world. Who knew? Now it would be her turn. But when? She knew that this was all messed up, that she could only have been falling for a few seconds, but it felt like a million years already. Was that fair? This was supposed to have been quick. She closed her eyes, and it made no difference at all. The Cascade danced and rolled and spun around her, splaying her hair out from her head and spinning her round like a rag doll. She could feel 1,000 golden slivers surround her, a cloak of beautiful death in this chamber of light. Take me home, Lil thought. The swarm closed in, and her mind caught light in a golden fire. None shall hinder the purpose, or raise their hands to the eternal machines. All those who dare must be destroyed, for without the machines the Cascade will fade away and all life shall end upon this starless world. The mindless sermon is almost complete. Today I have become the voice of the First Mother, but it isn't me. This isn't me. The silent speech of the priestess now runs to every corner of the city. Her words and my voice carried by the network everywhere that the church has roots, no matter how shallow and tenuous they may be. I can feel the minds out there in this room. With so many people so close, it is almost impossible to pick out an individual from the mess, even for the most talented of us. Here and there, I might be able to identify a true believer. During the remembrance, their minds shine with a fervour long since departed from most of us, if it were ever even there. They say that the priestess could pick a passing thought from your head, even if you were lost in the middle of the dawn celebrations. I could believe it. We will remember that the founders gave us minds to think with, and awoke the sixth sense among our people. We will remember that the body is nothing. The body is a shell, a machine like any other. The mind is all that matters. The mind will bring us to the purpose and the new world. We will search for the purest minds, and when the test is passed, a new world will dawn. My voice drones on. We will remember. And on. The body is nothing. The mind is the servant of the purpose. And on. We will remember. Remember? We remember nothing. This is just what we have been told. Lil opened her eyes and ran, her mind on fire. Through tear-filled eyes, her surroundings were blurred and incoherent, degenerating into a pulsing organic mess while the sounds of the city morphed and twisted into a tortured imitation of Vicky laughing on her 16th birthday. She ran. Ran to get away from the pictures, ran to get away from the golden lights and the cascade, ran to get away from Vicky, ran to get away from herself, her past, her future and her present. She ran, sobbing through the streets, ducking in and out of alleyways and vanishing into the city. The machine watched her go.